Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard, West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I like to say. Well, tonight I do have a guest lined up, Tommy. It's more about men. It's my fourth segment. He hasn't shown up yet, though, so I'm kind of crossing my fingers that maybe he is coming from a long ways, and I'm expecting that he's probably had problems in traffic. And who knows? I hope he shows up. But nevertheless, I'm going to continue on and do what I normally do here anyway, nevertheless. So I cross my fingers hoping that he shows up and we can hear his story and about his healing journey. And one thing I should mention about Tommy as well. Tommy came to the Gatehouse here, probably 10 years ago, I'm guessing. And I know he came here as a participant, and he's also was a facilitator here at the Gatehouse as well. So doing the men's groups and the drop-in. So Tommy has quite a bit of experience. He's stepped back from his role here for a little while, and he's coming back. And tonight would be great to have him on the radio show here as well. But Tommy is coming back is my point. So in the interim, let me get a couple of announcements out of the way. Right off the bat, starting on June 21st, that will be our 20th anniversary. And we are having a barbecue here at the Gatehouse and a bunch of stuff going on from 12 o'clock to 4 o'clock. So anybody in the greater Toronto area, or if you're outside Toronto, Ontario, Canada, that is, if you would like to stop by and say hello, well, the door is always open. Another thing I need to mention as well, July the 14th and 15th, we will be doing assist training again, suicide intervention training, and we still have some seats available. So if you're interested, go on to our website, and you can register that way through thegatehouse.org. And also, you could, if you don't want to do it that way, you can call at 416-255-5900. And that's 416-255-5900. And speak with any of the staff or volunteers, and we can register you if you're interested. Okay, so it's been an interesting the last few weeks have been very, very interesting. We've had some really good shows. We've had some really, really honorable men come in here. Last week, we had Eric Lockhart come in. He's survivor and founder of the Gatehouse. And before that, we had Rick come in. And again, he is a survivor and facilitator of the Gatehouse as well. And before Rick, we had Jay. So three very, very brave men and very inspiring men. I'm hoping that whoever has listened, maybe they've helped you in some way or fashion in regards to your healing journey. And if not, then maybe it has inspired you, provided you have the resources to get some help for your healing journey, recovering from your childhood sexual abuse. So there's lots of stuff been going on. And really what I'm trying to capture over these weeks, what I've been doing with the men, and let me should tell you this right now too as well. I will be doing, I would like to do the same thing. I'm going to put this invitation out to any women out there from the Gatehouse or abroad in the area that would like to come on and talk about their story, not just in their what happened to them, but I also would like to hear about their healing journey as well, what hopefully would brought them to a better place. So I'm going to put that invitation out. I know I'm going to do that around the Gatehouse, if anybody's, who would like to do it, and anybody else outside the Gatehouse as well. So that invitation is going to be there as well. So only fair is fair. I did men this time first, only because, well, respectively, I probably would have done women first, just the way I was taught. But I wanted to give men a chance to speak. And a lot of men do not speak about this sort of topic and really don't really have the language for it. So I thought and deemed necessary to bring these men in and to talk about their experiences in regards to their childhood sexual abuse and their recovery. And as I pointed out in earlier, and also hoping that I might instill some hope in any men that might be listening out there to get help and to realize that there is a better path. It really is the bottom line. You know, it's hard to be hard and shut the world out, but it's also really nice to, when you do let the world in, and realize that it's not as bad as what we might perceive it as. I know I for sure can say that for sure. I can't speak for anybody else, but for myself, that's what it was. So being able to come here and to talk about my experiences And it's helped me. Well, I'm not the same person I used to be, that's for sure. And it's still kind of in saying that, it's still kind of a learning journey for myself as well. I'll still try to figure out, who I really am. Since I had it taken away from me at a very young age, I never really had that experience of being able to figure out who I was until I actually came here and, started talking about those things called feelings. Yes, those things called feelings. And how do they connect with me? And yes, just because I'm a man, and where does my masculinity fit in? And where does all of it fit in? And what am I supposed to do with it after I figure out what it is? How am I supposed to cope with it? How am I supposed to, place these blocks and build things? I've always been a fixer, and not very good at fixing myself, but fixing everything else. Well, now that I've figured out all that stuff, feelings that is, and masculine feelings, I guess you can call it that, or just feelings in general, and being able to sort that out and put it into some kind of orderly fashion, I guess, for myself, if I can put it in that term, meaning that, where does my anger fit in now, or does it fit in? Am I still angry? Do I feel guilty still? For example, what else? Worthiness is a really big thing. Trust, all those sort of things that I had to sort of put into my wall that I had there and incorporated into my wall. So that when I looked at the wall, this is my own analogy, obviously, but when I looked at the wall, there's some transparency to my wall. It's hard to have a wall, but at the same time, if I'm able to add those components to it, it certainly makes me a lot more human in a lot of aspects, meaning that it's helped me with, for example, like connection with others, myself, not just in a social setting, but in intimate setting as well. It's helped me immensely in those fashions. And where anger, as I just mentioned, in that wall, that's transparent wall now I'm talking about. I have a wall, but it's transparent. At least I can see through it, and you can see through it as well, because that's how open I am about how I feel and what I'm doing and what's going on, especially what I'm doing here at the Gatehouse. So learning these things was not an easy feat. It's taken me years, actually, to get to where I am now. That may seem like a really long haul for some. All I can say to that is that, this dog here, the tricks I learned from a very young age, excuse me, has pretty much hung on until I came here. So I had basically pretty much 50 years of false belief towards myself and others. So just in a short amount of time, actually took a little bit more time than a short amount of time, but in that time, it's allowed me to figure out those things that I've mentioned. But what I could do, and which I think I am going to do to keep in context with what I'm talking about, is I think I'm going to grab the book by Deb Mayberry, and I'm going to probably try to read out of a couple stories out of that and talk about some more stuff. And again, I'm crossing my fingers. I hope Tommy shows up. I haven't heard one way or another. I know he's, and like I said, I know he's coming from a long way. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to dive into something and another story. So just bear with me here while I muddle around in my little box here beside me and dig it out. Shouldn't be too hard to find. Just bear with me here. Ah, here we go. Okay. Now, as you know, if you've listened in the past, I've talked about my story, and I've talked about a few other stories. So, in the context of what I'm doing, I that's why I feel that I might as well just read out of the book. And the book I'm talking about is Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. And if you go on to Amazon, you can find it there. It's not very expensive. And if you are a survivor and you need to know, you're not alone, then I would encourage you to buy this book to help you discover some things about yourself and like I say, to discover and realize that you are not alone. And there's many of us out there, not just men, but women, not just women, but men as well, that are just, you know, just dying to talk about their story, and they just don't know where to do it because they don't have, you know, for any number of reasons. One, they don't, well, I guess the biggest reason would be is that they don't have a safe place to talk about it, like I have here at the Gatehouse, and anybody else that's come in here. So let me see what I can find here. See if I can find a story here about another man. Let me just look in the book here. I talked about myself the last time, so let me find another one here. Okay, so maybe. Okay. So what I think I'll do. Okay, let me just find this here now. Just bear with me again here another minute. Okay, I think I'm going to go this story. It would probably be better. The story I'm going to read to you is from, let me find it here again. It's from Bob. It's a long story, but it's still very valid in what we're talking about in regards to today. So let me just find it here. Okay, so I'm quoting Bob and Dave and Deb Mayberry. Deb Mayberry is doing the interview with Bob. I don't have Bob's last name, and that's for his privacy. But Bob, in this case, is his story, and this is Bob's story. Okay, so it's nice to talk to you again. Thanks so much for participating in Unlock the Door. And then Bob replies, of course, thank you. And why don't we begin with you sharing basic premise of what happened to you? And Bob goes, sure. I am 45 years old, and when I was probably 11, I was molested by a scout leader. It profoundly impacted my life in ways that I'm not only just beginning to understand. That is that's a very short version. And Deb goes to ask him, when did you start talking about your sexual abuse? Bob replies, it's never been a secret with my wife. We've been married for 18 years. She's the first person I've told it to. So Deb replies, so I'm guessing you would have been in your 20s for the first time you spoke about it, about the abuse. And then Bob replies, right. I had zero awareness of that sexual abuse does to a child's mind. It was completely unaware until recently. While I was open to talking about it, I could speak about it, and it wasn't a secret. In the sense, I did not know what I was talking about. I just wasn't aware. Deb replies, "What have you learned, and how did you process? And then Bob starts off to say, "I started at my intake meeting for sexual abuse group. I wanted to attend, but the questions I was asked were real, and we had a very deep conversation. We covered a lot of bases, addiction, mental health levels of vulnerability, history, suicide attempts, and things of nature for me. The big one involves stress and anxiety. I have a high stress career. I figured the symptoms of stress I have are normal for a person in my circumstances. The intake worker asked some deeper questions after identifying the stress and the anxiety as issues for me. She also identified the physical symptoms of hypervigilance and flagged that as panic attacks. I was completely unaware of what panic attacks what a panic attack is. I think actually. And I was completely unaware I was experiencing this, and it was a symptom of child abuse. When I discovered that about myself, and I put together what I know about PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, I began to get very angry because I assumed those things were normal. I did not realize they were caused by other people that had done to me. Once I realized this, I knew I had something to do. Not only was there work to do on myself, but I need to do some things to bring dignity back into my life. Deb goes on to reply and say, can you elaborate? Tell me what you are referring to. Bob replies, I grew up in a house where because of things were subjected to, predisposed to being at risk. I was raised in an environment where the adults resigned with anger and maintained their well through their physical harm and or threat of physical harm. I felt very unsafe. I didn't feel honored or respected as a result. I felt alienated. My experience was that I would have to describe as lonely, but I think that's a minimizer. Also, I don't think that abused kids are lonely. I think that abused kids are alienated. There's a key difference between lonely places, and the onus is on the child. And that's not the only case, in my opinion. And Deb goes on and replies, alienated and lonely are two common words a lot of people mention when they have been abused. Bob goes on to say, the two are used simultaneously in everyday language. A child's experience of being alone becomes self-alienation after the fact. Abuse colors their perception of themselves and their perception of the world. The only rational way I was able to accept that I was going to adopt that belief that it was right. It was correct. This was the reality, and I had no choice. The people who were feeding me and putting me on the roof over my head were the people who depended on my existence, treating me very poorly. The only way I was able to cope with to think all of this was my fault or to deserve it, the human mind is always inventing reasons why things happen and justify them. Deb replies, it certainly does. Try it, doesn't it? Bob replies, yay, yes. As a child, your thought patterns are formed by these situations, circumstances, and conditions. You learn to live a lie, basically. Nothing happened. Deb replies, children grow up in that environment, don't know what a healthy family looks like, do they? Deb asks. Bob replies, absolutely not. I remember seeing my friends being hugged and kissed by their parents. They were playful, and they looked at them like they were thinking, man, you guys are fucked up. Excuse my language, but that's what it says. And this twisted butt was so alien to me that all I could do was perceive that the weirdness of it, that's how it alienated, and I was from the rest of humanity, right? That's what Bob was saying. Deb goes on, clearly you were afraid to in your own home. You experienced more than one kind of abuse. Bob replies, I need to make a key distinction here. People in my immediate family did not sexually abuse me. I want to be explicit about identify them as people who abused me, but not sexually. I'm doing my best to reconcile myself and to see if there is any possibility of reconciliation with them. It's a struggle. For so long, I identified with them, and that has recently shifted. Now I recognize that what has happened to me was wrong, was not my fault, and that I've been living a lie. My whole identity has been shaped around it. The realization was profound because it meant questioning my reality every moment until the point in my life. Deb goes on to say, that's pretty deep, questioning your entire reality. It's pretty amazing that you're walking through this one door, and can do. Bob replies, well, that's my truth. Deb says, so it was a scout leader. And then Bob replies, yes, who sexually abused me. Deb comes back to say, were you afraid of him or were you drawn to him? Deb asks. And Bob replies, yes to both. And here's the twist of the knife. It is significant to consider why and how I became predisposed of being at risk. I came from an environment where I was desperately seeking love and male attention. And when I began to realize how sexual abuse within Canada is systemic, it caused another level of anger for me. I realized I was let down not only through my predispositions, I should say, from my childhood environment, but also because of the system I was entering. My scout leader was warm, friendly, and outgoing. He was the youngest and the most macho of all the scout leaders. I was drawn to him the most because I wanted attention. I am sure he cultivated that. You know that, he asked. I never realized until this moment, but in the back of my mind, I can recall warning signs. There was hollowness or falseness around his necessity he displayed. As he was looking back, I can remember that feeling his niceness was on the surface. Deb replies, what does that look like? Or rather, Deb asks, what part am I doing trying to educate and help other people recognize the warning signs? What should parents and children pay attention to? Bob goes on to say, I tell you, this is a long answer, but I'm going to come around. There's an angle to this story. Last fall, my 16-year-old son, excuse me, yes, last year, last fall, my 16-year-old son, 8th-grade teacher, was arrested on child photography, pornography charges. Two years ago, he passed, since he thought he might have taught my son. As a parent, alarm bells went off for me. My son indicated that he had not been harmed, and he had no idea that he was part of his teacher's character. As a parent, Bob says, I felt relieved. But you know what? Even through my son, I was very aware 2 years have passed and anything could have happened. And who would have known? If I had been asked about my situation when I was 13 or 2 years after the fact, I might not have even shared anything. I also may not have recognized anything was wrong. Who knows right? Bob asks. And then Deb responds, right, more than a few people have kept secrets for a very long time. Bob replies, well, that was a trigger that sent me to the police to report that my scout leader had abused me. Back to the original question. When I think about the teacher, there are similar patterns and feelings that I experienced before. The teacher has not been convicted, and there is no indication that he's actually ever abused any kids. What do I recall is a similar feeling when I was around him. He wasn't interested in me as a parent. He was more interested in the kids and kept more than professional distance between himself and me. He made little eye contact and said little as possible. He was one of the most popular teachers with the students. He was very active with video games and still cameras in the classroom. And he was very, very close to the students, my son in particular. And Deb responds, said video cameras in the classroom? And Bob responds, yes. Oh, yes. Deb responds, that's a little odd and scary, Deb asks. And Bob replies, yes. But in the field trips, You want to be concerned with. So anyway, there's a similar distance, even through one instance, I was a parent, and the other was I was a child. It was feeling that I had around him that was so familiar. Deb responds, "You've had a lot of years to connect the dots." And Bob responds, "It comes in bits and pieces. My mind reveals things to me I've already understood to them. I don't have a complete memory of what happened. Excuse me, when I was abused, I either blacked out or withdrew. I had to accept that I don't remember much. Thought I tried for years. I am in a place now where I believe what happened to me was so undignified that I really would rather not know." Deb responds, "What was it that makes you think something more happened?" Bob responds, "I have a blank spot in my memory with a very vivid ending point and a very vivid starting point, but I don't know in what order they happened. The last sexual physical contact I recall is at the act of being touched. The skill leader had his hands on my groin area and inside my pants. This is like when you watch a horror movies and the screen goes black and then it comes back. The next memory is running through the woods and hitting my head on a branch. But I don't know why I'm running because I can't remember wherever it was I was running. Before I was touching her after it. I distinctly recall him giving me a pill in response to the bump in my head and after hitting the branch." Their response is say, "You said you reported your sexual abuse years later, shortly after your son's teacher was arrested. Were there any other reports against the scout leader?" Deb asks. "No," Bob responds. "As far as I know, I'm the first person reported, but I know with a fair degree of certainty that he did do this to other people because he normalized the behavior and called it a massage." The other scouts who were my age were all taking pleasantly about and were urging me to ask. There are awarenesses from kids who were in the same group, same troop. "I am sure it happened to other kids," Bob states. Deb goes on to ask, "At the age of 11, were there other kids saying, go and get the message?" Deb asks. And Bob responds, yes, they said. "Ask him nicely and they'll give you a massage. Deb responds, "What do you think about that?" And Bob responds, "I wanted a massage, and I'm pretty certain I asked him in front of the adults, and he sort of brushed it off and brushed me off. However, it wasn't long before he responded to my request because he went on an overnight weekend trip out of the city. Within 24 hours, the guy had his hands down my pants. Now I look back, and I have to wonder how much of it was going on with other people," Bob asked. Deb comes back to say, "As an adult, overhearing that kind of thing, there are obvious red flags. Is he still a scout leader?" Bob responds, "I don't know. The police are working with me to help find him, but we haven't located him yet." Deb goes on to say and ask, "Can you tell me why you are looking for him and what you hope to do when you accomplish when you find him?" Bob responds, "Well, the first thing I'm going to do is exactly what you're suggesting, to discover whether or not if he's still active and around children." And interrupted that, "The other thing is to locate the other people who were also abused by him, if they exist, and make sure that the best case is put forward to the authorities so he can be brought to justice." Deb responds, "What do you think about everything in the media concerning child abuse?" Bob responds, "I'm a member of the media, so I have two opinions. I think it's great to be creating awareness for people and who are being abused or were abused as children and to help them connect with each other and bring the predators to justice." Deb goes on to ask, what is justice to you? Bob responds, justice, accountability. And Deb says, asks after that, and after that, Bob responds, Bob responds, I'm working things out for with my parents, and I'm not necessarily a big believer in the penal system as a solution. From what I understand, the prison system is filled with people who were sexually abused as children. Deb goes on to ask, how old was the scout leader, and what would you want to happen to him and all these years later? There's no statute of limitations, right? Deb goes on to ask. And then Bob responds, well, that's correct. I'm guessing that he abused me. He was in his late 20s, early 30s. I'm not sure how to answer your question because it is out of my control. That's the way the police handle it. I am a witness, and if they deem that they have enough evidence to charge someone, then they do. And if they don't, then they don't. So the question is for the police. My focus is on healing myself. My focus is undoing what I need to do for me, and that includes confronting him. I don't know if I would get the opportunity within the traditional justice system. I am open to other things like healing circles or other approaches, but I don't know how effective they are. For me, my focus and my priority is looking at the upside of where my life goes from here and helping to create awareness around those issues. These issues, rather. This leads me to the second half of my response about media. I believe that the media is complicit in a certain way of keeping things the way they are around survivors of childhood sexual abuse, particularly in the sense of creating awareness around that, what can be or what can happen to adult survivors when they recognize that they've been living a lie. The focus is most of the media I've seen. I'm talking about television, popular films, and popular culture. It is on the damage or in the problem or and the suffering. The focusing on the negative is so typical. That is how adult survivor of childhood sexual abuse is portrayed in the media. But in my experience, it doesn't reflect that. My experience reflects something vastly different. Because once that lie was discovered, and once it was accepted, there was no other truth for me, which was nothing less than emancipation. Deb goes on to ask, what is your truth? Bob responds, my truth is that was innocent. When I was 12 or 13 years, I started drinking. I was introduced to alcohol in my own home, and I was completely unsupervised with unrestricted access. I began drinking by the time I was in grade 8. I was getting drunk before and after and during school. I had severe challenges in learning. My mind was not able to absorb information because I was scrambled by the PTSD and the panic attacks. Deb goes on to ask, were you angry? Bob responds, the truth is that there are two kinds of anger. The anger you turned outwards and the anger you turned inwards. It was more of the type to keep in. Bob responds, the things we did, we turned inwards. I abused myself. I saw where the blame should be for why I became the way I became. The guilt went away instantly. It felt like a lid came off my life. It was like I was living inside of a toy box, and the world was, and that was my world. Then, all of a sudden, the lid was pushed open. There was a whole cool version of there. I thought, wow, it's not heavy and I don't feel cramped. It was profound experiences, and the trigger that was confronting my parents. Once I confronted them as an adult and stood eye to eye with them and said things like, you punched me in the face when I was 12 years old and you drew blood. That's called child abuse. Do you have any remorse? The response was, well, let me tell you how you provoked me. Trying to reinsert the blame, I realized nothing had changed. They continued to believe it was my fault, as I had. So I continued to hurt myself with drugs, alcohol, and unhealthily risky behaviors. I became an extension of my parents, a tool of their thinking, and continued to hurt myself after they stopped. Deb goes on to ask, very powerful to confront your parents. Were they aware of the sexual abuse? Bob responds, no, they weren't aware. Here's the twist. Had they known about it, they would have stood up, probably reported it, and probably would have made sure that it went as far as it possibly could have in the courts. They would have done that because that's right in other people's eyes. But all the while, all the other abuse was going on in our house. This is why my mind was so screwed up. Because on the outside, everything appeared normal. They sent me to university paying for half, and they supported me in the things that I was interested in, like sports, music programs. Outwardly, I had all the support, and they appeared to love me. That was why it was so terribly twisted for me. Inside abuse, outside, the appearance of support. Deb goes on to ask and state, this is very common. Everybody I've shared that stream of conversation with has said the same thing. And that's what's sick about the whole thing. The outward experience, oh, that's a nice family, or wow, what a great person. And the inside of there's an abusive environment. All along, it was it fabricated, and you know, it was a facade for everyone that was creating. Bob goes on to respond and says, in my opinion, that's the worst part of it. You can heal from physical harm that was abuse that was done to you in your mind. That was so deliberate, can't even speak now, debilitating. Your learning is interrupted and your voice is subverted. They say that for the first casualty of war is in the truth. Well, the first casualty of childhood sexual abuse is your voice. And once your voice is gone, you're screwed. Deb goes on to ask and respond. Yes, it certainly refers to the approach of life where you lose your voice. Regaining your voice is significant. Life-changing, in fact. Bob responds, excuse me, my throat's a little bit harsh, but Bob responds, and PTSD and your ability to learn about becomes truncated because the symptoms are similar to ADD or to ADHD. You can't properly orient the situations and your focus is constantly distracted. Once I took a general math course, then I took an advanced course, thinking all I need is a little bit extra time to improve. It wasn't true. I didn't do well in either course, and this is the burden. This was the burden of the survivor. We go through life such tendencies because we realize and believe we can succeed. There is a deep part of us that knows that we can't get by and we can become driven to succeed. Yet, the harder you try, the harder it gets. It's like a receding goal. You're on the treadmill and with a picture of horizon, and the harder you run, instead of getting closer to the horizon, you get further and further away from your destination. It's not about hard work. It's about healing. Deb goes on to ask, what does healing look like to you? And Bob responds, well, it looks like that what I'm going to go through right now, awareness, accepting the truth, and standing fast in my truth, that was sexually abused as a child. That is my truth. I was sexually abused by a scout leader who was an authority figure in my life. part of healing is the answer. Well, part of the healing is awareness of the symptoms of childhood sexual abuse. Understanding the unversatilities of in the experience, which the other survivors have shared with me in person, and which I've read about, that resonate very strongly with me. For example, the harder you work, the further behind you get, and the feeling that you can't be your true self with someone because trust was broken. I went through life struggling to trust people, particularly around sharing in my feelings. And Deb goes on to ask, to state, we all agree with you on that one. And Bob goes on to say, yes, trust yourself. Trust that everything is going to be okay. Trust everything is going to be okay. The experience of feeling loved, allowing yourself to feel loved by other people. Deb goes on to say, or to ask, are you saying that you don't allow that? And Bob responds saying, I'm saying there were times I haven't. And Deb goes on to ask, what symptoms did you have? And Bob mentions, I've mentioned the big ones, PTSD, alcohol, substance abuse, addictions, and panic attacks. When I looked at the major symptoms, I had 9 out of 10. When I understood why I began drinking, that was when I was given alcohol and how inappropriate that was and all the other ways. I misused it over my lifetime. I recognize that that's not your fault, pal. It's perfectly understandable why I ended up the way I did. The irony is I grew up in an environment feeling proud of it. I wore it on my sleeve and it became a tough guy. It's unreasonable to expect that on my 18th birthday, I turned it all around and became a responsible adult. It was like going to happen. Thought at this time, it was to be responsible. I didn't know how. I hadn't been taught. I was shaped into other things that was self-defeating. Deb goes on to ask and state, can you go back just a little bit where you talked about losing your voice and combine that with, you mentioned confronting what you would say to your scout leader now? Deb asks. That's so far from my conscience right now. I don't know where he is, and I don't really have any hope of discovering where he is in the near future. I honestly can't tell you in this moment, but I would need to get in touch with my anger around it. And right now, I'm not angry. Deb goes on to ask, do you think you would want to feel angry when you spoke to him? Bob responds, well, it would be appropriate to express anger, but the truth is I express anger to people who first abused me, and I don't know, maybe there's nothing left in that tank. Maybe I don't have anger to express to him anymore. I'm not quite sure what I would say. I may deal with it in a different way. I may have to deal with it in a way that was most inappropriate for me in that moment. When that moment comes. Deb goes on to ask, are there questions you would like to ask him? Bob responds, my style would be more statements, letting him know that the damage he did. I think that's what the beginning of justice would look like for me. I would make sure that he understands how he profoundly affected my life by what he did. Deb goes on to state and ask, when you say how profoundly you were affected, what if someone said, come on, man, you don't even remember what happened just a little bit before, just a little bit before and a little bit after? How could it be so profound? And Bob responds, well, part of preparing for what would be to ground myself, the effects of it is not only what happened to me, it's to sideline me from making a big competition contribution to humanity as I might have done. Had I not been abused, there is a wider cost that meets the eye. But again, this is a moment I'm not going to touch with anger. I am not in denial. It's far away, that it's not real for me, and I can't go there, Bob states. Deb goes on to say, the reason I asked was because I've heard sexual abuse, like your situation, to be minimized. Oh, that wasn't so bad. Get over it. Those are words that seem to be harmful as the act itself, often resulting in more anger. Bob goes on to state after Deb saying that, my relationship with anger has shifted since I've expressed my feelings to my parents. My experience was the first time I really confronted them with anger. And prior to that, I was carrying around as resentment for myself and toward other people. There was a weight behind and under my anger. And once I expressed it in an appropriate way to the responsible people, I felt completely different. I was able to, A, stand up for myself, and B, express anger back to the source. I was able to create a safer boundary for myself and to let them know what he did was not acceptable by any standard. I told them I was wrong for what happened and was not normal. That was the demonstration, that was the demarcation point, the point of which if they wanted to have real relationship with me, they needed to get a real and be sincere. Find a way to make it work in a healthy manner. I continue to say if they wanted to reconcile, it might be possible, but they would have to do some work to do. They have some work to do. I was returning the responsibility for what had been done to me at their feet and walking away. Deb goes on to ask, have you ever asked yourself why they are that way? Bob goes on to say, I identified with that for the longest time. I made excuses for them because they are children of war. They grew up with bombs being dropped in their neighborhoods. And I had no compassion for them than myself. Deb goes on to ask, they were somehow entitled to do what they did because they grew up in a war. Bob responds, no, not to make excuses, not to justify or not to say that it's right, but I always had some level of understanding of compassion for why they might have done what they did. That was the other thing that broke when I confronted them. I stopped identifying with any excuse or any reason for having to do with them for the first time. I began to identify with my own experience more strongly than theirs. Deb goes on to say, good for you for having the courage to speak your truth. I certainly can see the connection between you, what you've experienced in your home, and how it could create a personality for more susceptible and vulnerable to sexual abuse. It also makes me think of the cycle of abuse and why people are quiet for so long. I feel that if people know what happened to them, they may presuppose that they're involved in a similar behavior. And Bob responds to say, right, yes, that is a very significant point. There is fear that if you identify the person who has abused you at risk for abusing other people, that's not necessarily the truth. Deb responds, that's right. It's a myth that everyone who sexually abused will sexually abuse others. I held that fear for many years. In fact, that was a significant reason why I remained silent. I thought that someone thinking I touched that child in that manner turned my stomach. Bob responds, yes, that's a burden. I've discovered that while there's a well-documented part of my sexual abuse, like negative effects on people who are abused, or PTSD, panic attacks, ADHD, and learning challenges, substance abuse and addictions. There's more to it. There's less awareness about the on the flip side, which is an equal in magnitude. When people recognize the lie that's starting to tell the truth about their experience, they become empowered. I'm telling you, it's emancipation, and that is phenomenal. That people don't know about it yet. It's in the mirror. Deb goes on to say, I'm totally in agreement with that. I resist speaking too much about it because I sometimes think that people don't understand the other side, the positive, the remain in the negative aspects of the story. Depending on where people are in their healing process, they are sometimes more to discuss these things. Often, it is too difficult even to recognize what is the positive, recognize what is the positive, because they are still dealing with the story itself, and it's still very tough time for them. Bob goes on to say, my experience is like training for the marathon in a work boots. I train. It's hard, I sweat, I suffer, and I go through that for however long. Then the race day arrives, I put on a pair of sneakers, and I've got the wind in my back. That's what it's been like, Bob responds. Deb goes on to ask, well, it's been great talking with you. Would you like to add anything for the last question? Bob goes on to say, yes, I can't emphasize enough the different ways that you can heal from the overwhelming sense of dread and failure and lack of empowerment. All these things are symptoms of childhood sexual abuse. That is an illusion. It's a spell and spells that can be broken. It's exponential. Imagine thinking of two sailors prior to discovering the world was round. Two things happened. Exploring new worlds became the possibility that existed in the world. It got bigger, and that was the new truth. Until that moment, they sailed along the coast and hugged the coast. No one went exploring too far out. But this is a kicker. The real shift was that the fear of falling in the edge of the world was removed. Remember when they used to say the world was flat? I think Christopher Columbus proved them wrong on that one, didn't he? Okay. It is their experience of it shifted. That is what happened to me when I discovered I had been living a lie. And Deb goes on to say, well, thank you. One last question. There's an 11-year-old boy who feels awful because something had happened to him similar to what happened to you. What would you tell him? Deb asks. And Bob responds, in the words of Marilyn Manson, I wouldn't say much. I'd be listening. Well, there you go. That is the story by Bob. I'm going to have to change my heading on here, so it does not look like my guest showed up. That's all right. Tommy's coming back to the gatehouse, and I'm sure I'll get another chance, and I don't know what happened. I'm guessing. I could guess anything, but I won't assume because I really don't know. But anyway, folks, I read this story anyway in replacement of Tommy coming in, and I'm probably going to talk about a few more things before I shut her down. But that's Tommy's. This is Bob's story, which I'm going to go back and I'm going to change the title on my page to know that you know that this was Bob's story, and then of course that I had to read it to you from Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. But there's something here I saw in the beginning of this. I think I'm just going to read this off quickly. And again, this is from Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. And this is a poem. I'm not going to hide the wisdom of 10-year-old Faith. I used to be insecure, shy, secretive. I was scared they were going to judge me if I spoke. Scared they weren't going to listen. scared they weren't going to listen. There were so many things going through my mind, so many things I wanted to say, but was always too shy. So I finally said something, and when I did, they all listened. They all helped me get better. Child abuse is a thing that can make you shut down and hide from the world. When I spoke about it, I felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. I'm no longer insecure. I used to be. I'm no longer shy, secretive, or wanting to be alone. I am in school clubs, school sports teams. I volunteer, and I'm not afraid to sign up for new things. The world without fear of being judged. Talking about it helped me in so many ways that I am no longer the quiet one in the group. I speak my mind, and I stick up for people and for the things I believe in. I want to help others because it's not about the bad things, not about the bad things to talk about, whatever happens to me or at home. Child abuse is a worldwide problem that needs to stop. Through it can help be a very scary thing. It is better, a lot better than living happily than living in fear. So that was a poem by Faith. I'm not going to hide. The wisdom of a 10-year-old. And if you get the logistics of what I'm talking about as far as the poem is concerned, it's about your voice and about coming out in your voice, about being scared. And then when you do finally discover that your voice is being validated like mine has, and here I am talking to you, then these sort of things happen to you. New doors open, new opportunities open. It's still basically up to you any way you look at it, and in regards to how you're going to, how you're going to function, and how you're going to, how you're going to heal, how your healing is going to go, and what you're going to allow in your life, and what you're not going to allow in your life. Well, Bob, all I'm saying is thank you, man. That was quite the story and quite the experience you've had to live through. Abuse of parents and then having to go through that through all your life. Now, I'm pretty sure I know Bob, and I'm pretty sure I've met him coming through the gatehouse. Like I say, I can't mention his last name because I don't have his permission, but if you go on Amazon.ca and our Kindle books, you will find Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. The author is Deb Mayberry. Deb Mayberry is entrepreneur in many different facets. She's also put out a CD. She's just done a short movie as well. So Deb wears many hats and has done many things in her healing process. And she's a great example of not thinking you can't do something. You can do something because Deb goes ahead and does it. When you think you can't do it, she does it. So she's a great example of that for sure. I don't think I'm going to talk much longer. I'm kind of spent for my day and that, and I can't really say too much more. Other than I will have somebody here next week, one way or another. I have another person in mind, which I just need to confirm. But again, another male, and I'm still hoping that Tommy will come back. So I really, really apologize. Here I am advertising for Tommy, and Tommy doesn't show up for whatever reason. And I can't fault him for whatever. And I'm not trying to put blame or anything. Just, we know what they say, but shit happens. And when it happens, it happens. But I'm going to say, folks, that have a good night. Have a good weekend. Hope you're not triggered in any way from my stories I was talking about. And if you are, then you take really, really good care of yourself. I am going to tell you a couple more announcements before I do finish. One is that... on June 21st, we will be celebrating our 20th anniversary. The only gatehouse in the world, man. The only gatehouse in the world. The only place that offers what we offer at all. Go onto our gatehouse website, thegatehouse.org, and please check it out. But anyway, the 21st is when we're celebrating our 20th anniversary. Looking forward to that. I get to do lots of cooking at that one. I do like to grill. At least I get to help out on that anyway. So, yes, the 20th anniversary. And I cannot forget about July 14th and 15th. We do suicide intervention training. That'll be a weekend, 2 days, 2 day commitment. If you're interested in sharpening your skills in suicide prevention, we offer that here at the Gatehouse. Myself and Brad do it, and now actually we're going to have a few more people from the house doing it as well. So we have lots of support here, supporting one another and supporting the people we're showing this to. So, folks, I will say good night. Thank you for listening in, and I'll talk to you next week. Good night.